You're listening to Let's Talk on Talk Radio Europe. Once a month, we have Alistair Spence-Clark with us from Spence-Clark Accountants, and he's with us now. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, Bill. I'm back again.
You're back again. We've had a busy old month, actually, with lots of questions coming in, and that's fantastic to see. If anyone wants to ask any questions about Alistair, he's here at the end, the last Thursday of every month, and all you need to do is email steph@tre.radio, and she'll forward those questions on to Alistair. So some simple ones today, I think, Alistair, and one that might take us slightly longer. So
Yeah, I mean, these are good ones. We've obviously sort of selected some ones which are more popular than others.
Yeah. Let's start with one which I remember when your colleagues came in on the show once and this subject came up, and my head was spinning after it, actually, because in the UK, the subject of company cars was reasonably straightforward. But suffice to say, in Spain, not necessarily. So Barry was asking about company cars, and he says he does have a company car and the business pays all of the costs. How much tax does he have to pay? Can we start by talking about company cars in Spain and what is not a company car?
Well, a company car in Spain is a car that is owned by a company. I mean, I'm sorry to be but it is. It has to be owned by a company, and that company has to employ you. So I think Bill may well be a director or something, and he has a company car. It's his company, and the company pays all the costs. Mm-hmm. And he's getting some weird answers from various people. So I thought it's actually quite simple.
Okay.
Spain says if your company car costs 30,000 euros, mm-hmm. then you are regarded as receiving income of 20% of that.
Right.
So that's 6,000 euros a year. But if you use the car, you know, half on business and half for pleasure or personal use, driving to the office, for example, then you only pay tax on half of that because it's half business use. Mm-hmm. So basically, your 30,000, Renault Megane or whatever, is going to be treated as 6,000 of benefit in kind, but only half of it is taxable. So in fact, your 30,000 euro car with all the costs of running it in every way, insurance, fuel, everything, is going to cost you 3,000 euros of income. And then you're going to pay tax on that.
Right.
So if your tax rate at the top end of your tax rate is 40%, it's actually only going to cost you 1,200 euros to have a 30,000 euro company car with all the costs involved, assuming you use it half for business and half for pleasure. So it's not so complicated. The UK has, you know, special tables, you know, depending on this, that and everything else. But in Spain, it's quite a simple system, actually.
I think where my head started to spin is when I asked the question, what about self-employed?
Oh, bad question. it's not good news. Unfortunately, and until this ruling, this interpretation of law goes to some pretty senior courts, this is what we've got to live with. Basically, what income tax law says, according to the tax office, is if it's mixed use, so if it's half use for business and half use for pleasure, you can't claim one iota of the costs. You cannot claim the fuel. You can't do anything. So it's completely unfair. It's an abusive interpretation of law, but that's what they do. And basically, the tax system in Spain is very confrontational, and the tax office relies on the fact that it takes 10 years to take something to senior courts, and in the meantime, they collect the taxes. So watch this space. Eventually, somebody will take this to court and get this interpretation overruled so that it's sensible. Mm. Obviously, it should be exactly the same as for a company. You should be able to claim the mileage or the proportion of business use. But at the moment, you can't. Same applies, incidentally, to mobile phones. So you've got one mobile phone, you're self-employed, and you think, well, I can claim that on my business. Yeah. No, you can't. It's mixed use. You've got to have two mobile phones.
Wow.
Mad.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, you can get some phones which are double chipped, so you can have, you know, a mobile number. But, you know, same with the internet. You've got the internet at home. You say, I work at home all day. In fact, I work at home exclusively.
Yeah.
Ah, but I watch TV on it. No, you can't. You can't claim any of it. Ludicrous. You've got to have two internet suppliers. Now, that is abusive, and that is what the tax office is all about in Spain. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, they're not exactly making it easy to be self-employed, let's say.
No, I mean, it's as I said, and I'll go ad nauseum, I'll say it's an abusive interpretation and it should be overturned by the courts, but we're going to have to wait some time for that to happen.
Okie dokie. On to an email from Christina. She says she's leaving Spain. She was probably self-employed. And she wants to know whether she will have to pay tax when she sells her home. She said that, understand that if I was over 65, I wouldn't have to pay tax, but I'm only 40 years old. I'm buying a new home in the UK in Manchester. Look out for the rain then, Christina. What's the answer to that one then? Tax on selling her home.
My question is, why the hell are you going back to Manchester?
I was going
to
say that, yes.
I think this is very, very interesting because it's deeply technical, but I can make it as simple as possible. First of all, if you're over 65, we know you can claim your exemption. But if you go back to the UK, you've got to be resident when you claim your exemption, so you can't leave, ridiculous as it may seem, until July of the year. Now, if you're not entitled to the 65-plus exemption, you do have the right to claim exemption if you buy a new house.
Right.
So there you are, Spanish person, you sell a house, and then you buy another one, and as long as you use all the money from the sale to invest in the new one, you don't pay capital gains tax.
Okay?
Nice and simple. The problem is that if you leave the country in the first half of the year, it's the same as the 65-year-old. You claim the exemption on your tax return. The tax office will ask you what you bought, and you got up to 2 years to buy another house. And as long as you provide the tax office with evidence that you bought a house in Manchester within 2 years, then you can claim the exemption. The problem happens is if you leave the country in the first half of the year,
right,
because you're not a resident. Now, the good news is, since 2014, when they changed the rules, a non-resident filing a tax declaration saying they've sold their house can nevertheless claim this exemption.
Okay.
But they have to pay the tax first, because at the time they sell the house, they're non-resident. They left in January, February, March. But when they buy the new house, within 3 months of buying the new house, you file another Form 210 claiming the tax exemption. And then you'll get your repayment. I mean, the tax office will ask for everything, including your inside leg measurement.
Yeah.
But you will get your money back, and it may take 6 months, 8 months, 9 months, but it's feasible. So, Christina, you're in luck, because you're buying a new house in Manchester, and it's not going to be all misery and rain.
Yep.
You'll be able to get your money back, and that's important.
So
tricky, though.
As is so often the case, and I've heard you mention this before, timing of these things can be critical, can't it?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many traps because, you know, the tax system in Spain and the tax system in the UK is not designed for people coming and going. So mistakes happen. Mistakes in the law happen. Unfairness happens. So the short answer to anyone coming or going to Spain, best thing is pick up the phone, speak to someone like us, and we will prevent you from falling into the pitfalls.
Fantastic. Sue is a retired teacher, and she asks, what is the reciprocal agreement that exists between the UK and Spain, and what does that say about teachers' pension? Is this to do with the double tax treaty?
Yeah, I think it is. I think Sue is referring to a treaty, because there's no particular treaty on teachers' pensions, but there is a treaty on pensions in general.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Sue is referring to the fact that civil service pensions, of which teachers are obviously civil servants, only the UK, if the UK is paying a pension, only the UK can tax that pension.
Right.
So effectively, it's exempt from tax in Spain. Now, this applies to ex-policemen, ex-coal board employees, believe it or not, because the coal board used to be a state organization.
Okay.
British Steel may well be again, for all we know. So if the state or one of its sort of bodies pays the pension, municipal pensions, NHS doctors, nurses, anyone like that, the pension income is not taxable in Spain, which is good news, because in the UK they'll give you personal allowances, that'll come off, and Spain will then tax you on the rest of your income.
Right.
Which is your state pension, for example, and it might be a private pension, might be some investment income. Spain will have the rest of it. The only trick, the only nasty bit in this, and this is quite recent, is that Spain will say, yes, you may be exempt from income tax on that income, but we're entitled to knock off that income from your personal deductions, like your personal allowance, your earned income allowance, which is quite generous in Spain. So what happens is that your other income, your non-UK civil service pension, gets taxed in Spain at higher rates, in effect, because you've used up your allowances and you used up your lower income rates.
Okay. You know,
the 20% rate. So it's 99% good news. I have seen a lot of people actually get very upset that they thought it was fully exempt, and then they found they had a pretty high income tax bill in Spain because they had no allowances left. Mm. So that's something to be aware of. So it's not all rosy, okay?
Well, 99% is not bad for Spain.
Yeah. I mean, it's yes, it is. Yes. You're quite right.
Okay, take a deep breath, Alistair. I think this one could be a tricky one. We did speak about Sally, I think it was last month, who is a website designer and was using a UK company to trade. And your office has had an inquiry, and in fact, we had another further email about this, about using UK companies to trade when you actually live in Spain.
Yeah, it's a very attractive proposition. People who have done business in the UK, they find small companies very, very easy to manage. They're very cheap to set up.
Yeah.
And, you know, they think, well, it's 17% corporation tax. It's got to be better, you know, than Spain. Mm. The trouble is, it's complicated.
Right.
And often it actually costs more tax than it would otherwise have done. So we've had a lot of inquiries of actually in the last month we've had two phone calls on this, but over the years we've had a lot of inquiries on this. So it's obviously a technically difficult area, and people get the wrong advice. So your options are Spanish company, mm-hmm. self-employed Spain, or use a UK company.
Right.
Now, basically, there are a lot of people who've got small businesses, you know, lifestyle consultants, people doing admin work, bookkeepers, designers, as Sally was last month, and they work at home. They think, well, you know, UK company, nice and simple, but it's not the case. In Spain, being self-employed, being an autónomo, is probably the simplest you can possibly imagine. I know we got to file tax returns in Spain, but you have to do that in any country. And having a UK company, you know, you've got PAYE returns to do, you've got to employ an accountant in the UK,
yep.
You've got to do proper accounts, you've got to file those accounts in company's house. It's not that simple. And honestly, at the end of the day, you're better off being an autónomo, except in one or two very particular circumstances.
Okay.
Now, the first one is if your income is more than 70,000 a year, your business income makes, let's say, 100,000, 150,000 a year, mm-hmm. euros, okay? Now, in those circumstances, if you don't spend all that money, so you make that money profit, you know, the company invests in equipment, stuff like that, well, if the company is reinvesting some of the profits, then it could be better having a UK company.
Right.
Could be. Okay. However, if you spend the money, actually, you're going to pay income tax in Spain. There's no way you can get out of it, whether it's a salary from the UK or dividend from the UK. It's going to be subject to tax in Spain as income. Mm. So if you earn less than 70,000, the odds are that it wouldn't be worthwhile having a UK company. That's a pretty simple message.
Okay.
Second is, if it's over 70,000 and you spend it, you know, whether it's on your mortgage or your school fees or whatever, then you're better off being an autónomo, because at the end of the day, you're going to pay the same amount of tax and you've got a lot more admin with a UK company. There is one special area which is particularly interesting, and that is the UK does not charge VAT, does not require anyone to charge VAT on their sales until they get to 85,000 a year.
Yep.
Okay. Now, if you sell to businesses, well, it doesn't make any difference because the VAT on your sales is recovered by the business, so they don't care whether you pay VAT or not.
Yeah.
But if you sell to the public, let's say you have an internet shop and you sell clothes to the public, and your VAT, your sales are less than 85,000 quid, which is 100,000 euros, then if you've got a UK company running your internet shop, then it would be worthwhile using a UK company because you would save 21%. So on 100,000 sales to the public, you know, you'd save 21,000 euros, and that's a serious amount of money. And it's completely legitimate for you to have a UK company, okay? And indeed, we work with UK accountants who look after some of our clients who've got situations like this. But and there's always a but, isn't there?
Yeah, there is.
Well, sorry. the big but is you've got to have a UK base. You can't just be in Spain working out of your home and pretend that the UK company is not working in Spain. Spanish corporation tax law says if you are running the business out of Spain and it's got nothing to do with the UK, you can't have a UK company and get away with it.
What about if your clients are all from the UK?
Well, if the client's in the UK, no problem at all. Or if you have a client who's in Spain whose family member is a director of the company in the UK, and they've got a registered office in the UK and they do something, you know, they're part of the business, then fine, you can have a UK company. But if you are a Spanish resident person with nothing to do with the UK, if you try and use a UK company, the tax office catches up with you. The tax office will say, yeah, you can have a UK company as much as you want, but as far as we're concerned, it's Spanish. Wow. And they will charge you Spanish corporation tax and Spanish VAT. And you really don't want 5 years of VAT assessments on your 100,000 a year income. That will make you bankrupt. Yeah. So be very, very, very careful using UK companies, or you can get into very serious trouble.
And that's it. So basically, the bottom line you're saying there is that being a Spanish autónomo is probably the right decision for 90% of the time. And we know, when we've talked about it many times on the show, and you've mentioned it today, that being a Spanish autónomo is sometimes fraught with problems.
Well, it's not really. I mean, if it's fraught with problems, then you've got the wrong advisor.
Right.
Sorry, I mean, I've got to say that I'm on radio because I want to be nice to people who want to be nice to me. But the reality is that for most small traders, including shops, you're better off being self-employed. Now, there are some particular reasons why you don't want to be self-employed. Company car is one of them.
Yeah.
Now, if you have two cars, incidentally, let's say you are a physiotherapist and you travel, or a hairdresser, and you go around to people's homes, and, you know, you're married. And your spouse, I'm not going to be sexist here, your spouse also has a car.
Yes.
Then you say, well, this car with all the labels on it, you know, Mickey Mouse Physiotherapy Incorporated, yeah, on the side of the car.
Yeah.
And your other car you use personally, you can say to the tax inspector, I've got two cars.
Right.
That one I can fully deduct. This one I accept is my personal car.
Mm-hmm.
I have two phones. I have my business phone number and I have my personal phone number. So if you are properly organized, properly advised, then being an autónomo is not that difficult.
As long as you have two of everything.
As long as you have two of everything. Yeah. Well, you know.
Noah was right all along then, clearly.
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, but to have a UK company is a hammer to crack a nut.
Yes.
I think for 90% of people, it would not be suitable.
Yeah.
I mean, the VAT thing is a very, very important advantage of a UK company. That is, you know, 21,000 in your pocket is seriously worthwhile. Mm-hmm. But apart from that, the income tax, corporation tax kind of thing, it's, you know, you've got to be earning quite a lot of money to make a UK company worthwhile. And let's remember, you can't have a UK company unless you have a real establishment in the UK. You know, your brother, your sister, your mother, your father, somebody who is your partner in business, who's operating that business, and you are the Spanish end of it, then you can claim, well, it's a proper UK business.
Yes.
But it's delicate.
Interesting. Well done, sir, for explaining that one. And I think you've got a little bit more detail on your website in a guide that you've put there, haven't you?
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's on my website yet. It will be soon. If it's not there, it will be soon.
Okay.
I think I started writing it a couple of weeks ago, and I wanted to put it up, and I think I got distracted. And so people, go to my website. If you can't find it, bear with me. In a couple of weeks' time, it will be there.
Fantastic.
And I'll have this all analysed out so that people can understand it and they can reflect on it and think about it properly.
Fantastic. And that website is spenceclark.com, a Spence with an E, Clark with an E on the end, all one word. And what's the telephone number for any advice as well, Alistair?
Yeah, it's 95-282-2943. And if you just say, you know, Spence Clark, Marbella, accountants, anything like that, we'll come near the top of most searches. And obviously, just to say, if any of the listeners have a particular question, particularly anything that's come out of today, but on other topics as well, they're always free to phone our office. We don't charge for a quick telephone conversation. And we're more than happy to do a little bit of social service by helping our fellow foreigners in Spain and trying to help make life easier for them when it comes to the tax office and social security and all the rest of it.
Fantastic. And if you have any questions to put to Alistair, you can email, as I said at the start, steph@tre.radio. And Alistair will be back on the last Thursday of next month. Thank you, sir. We shall let you go and look forward to talking again same time next month.
Terrific, Bill. Thank you. Look forward to speaking to you again. Bye.